Good evening, and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Our guest this evening is Tom Montaigne, founder of Montaigne Architecture Works Incorporated, a Winnipeg-based architecture firm that specializes in design-intensive, one-of-a-kind projects. The firm has developed a national reputation for innovative work with a particular emphasis on the prairie landscape and environmental responsibility. Architectural projects and award-winning designs include the 1919 Marquee, a monument to the Winnipeg General Strike, La Cuisine, the Winnipeg Folk Festival Kitchen, Half Moon Drive-In in Lockport, and the Hemp Oil Canada offices. Some of the architectural awards recognizing their innovation over the years have been the Commerce Design Awards Grand Jury Prize and People's Choice Award, celebrating excellence in wood structures, and the Prairie Wood Design Award of Excellence. They've also been written about in various publications, such as Canadian Architect. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
You have founded an innovative architectural firm that specializes in unique design-intensive buildings for national and international clients. Can you elaborate on the mission and scope of the Montaigne Architecture Works for our audience?
Well, we're based in Winnipeg, and the reality is most of what we do is in Winnipeg or within a short distance of Winnipeg. Some of our work has been recognized far afield, which is always interesting, but really, we're pretty focused on working in our community. In a way, you know, architecture is a kind of old-fashioned business in the sense that we're doing actual things that actually exist in three-dimensional physical space that people actually use, say, as opposed to like a digital industry. Because of that, we're really tied to place and to, you know, the people who will use a building. So it's very immediate. I'm not exactly sure where it all comes from, but I'm pretty committed to the notion of trying to live as lightly as possible on the earth, have the least negative impact and most positive impact, and that manifests itself in lots of different ways. The building we did for the Folk Festival, the structure was 100% recycled from a building that was being dismantled, an old industrial building. So we were able to buy the steel from that building, actually while it was still standing, so it was kind of great, move it out to the Folk Festival site at Birds Hill Park, and then cut it up and remake it into a new structure that has a different shape, but it still has the character of the old building and suited the Folk Festival because that's in keeping with their mandate. But it's also, I guess, an example of how the ideals get turned into something actual.
And also, in regards to La Cuisine, from the outside, it almost has a Mondrian-style movement and color pattern.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of gestures and aesthetic movement does the design, colors, and materials make towards the surrounding prairie landscape?
Well, I mean, that particular facade was directly inspired by the, you know, when you go to the Folk Festival, there's the main stage, the tarp, the field of tarps. So we actually invented a word. We called it tarpology. So the idea was that facade on La Cuisine is a representation of the tarpology of the Folk Festival. It wasn't inspired by Mondrian, let's say, just although that's an interesting kind of reference. We certainly, like lots of architects, we like those paintings from that guy. But that is very specific to, I mean, you know, the Folk Festival takes place in the prairie landscape at Birds Hill Park. And, you know, so there is, I guess, a reference to the prairie. But more important, I would say it's indicative how the building or a building can embody or represent something real to the users. We like that notion of communicating some content, some meaning directly to people in a way that's understandable.
In following and keeping with your ideas and your interpretations and ways that you'd like to present your buildings, this particular project is going to be part of the Matière Grise at the Pavillon de l'Arsenal in Paris, France.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about this event and your participation and what's involved in an architectural firm becoming part of something like this?
The project, it was an exhibition at a gallery in Paris that is an institution that's dedicated specifically to architecture. So it was part of an exhibit, one of probably 50 projects from around the world in that exhibit. They all focus on this notion of reusing basically obsolete or discarded building materials in one way or the other. It's interesting for us because actually, since that exhibit, the Folk Festival building, La Cuisine, has been published a few times. It was just recently published last month in a German journal on steel construction, because it's actually quite innovative to take steel from an old building and, like I said, cut it up and recombine it into a new form. It's just not done. It's not part of mainstream architectural practice for a whole bunch of reasons. When we're working and starting a project, we don't go, well, you know, what's the most innovative thing we could do? We just go, you know, what are the values of the client? What's the situation? What do we think's important? And then set a trajectory for the project, and by coincidence or default, it becomes innovative, or it's deemed innovative.
It's interesting, too, that your innovations may be used again in different ways that other people can use in other instances.
Well, I think that's actually been one of the really most interesting things about the Folk Festival project, is that it's a story and an idea that really resonates. It appears that in Europe, France and Germany and Switzerland and those places, the idea that used building materials are an important resource that should be considered, you know, should become more mainstream in its use and reuse, they're probably ahead of us in North America in terms of thinking like that. So I guess that's why a project in Winnipeg gets picked up and talked about in other places. But what's also interesting is we learned a lot doing that project about how to use a material like that. So, I mean, if other people learn from it, that's great. We're, you know, very flattered that anybody else would find it interesting. But we're also teaching ourselves how to use it. And we actually have a couple projects coming up that where we're trying to take this strategy but go even farther with it.
Would the role in the strain design of the Hemp Oil Canada building in Saint-Agathe, Manitoba, be using anything like that? And what are some of the other key design features of this building?
See, that's a different tact, because they're the material investigations focused on using a new material, specifically in this case hemp, and the fiber created almost as a byproduct of creating hemp oil, to create other kinds of building materials. And there we were working with some guys in Alberta that have been making kind of like a particle board made from hemp fiber, and they're making these sort of blocks, kind of a light concrete block using hemp fiber as a reinforcement in it. And so there's a bunch of uses of materials derived from hemp in that project. What ties that all together is the exploration of the materiality of things, with the idea of trying to minimize one's impact on the world, what's the most energy efficient or resource efficient, and even, you know, also cost effective ways to do things. It's like a common theme we always have to explore and work on and discover. What I was going to say is that we're hoping to build a bridge using shipping containers as the main building material, because shipping container, they're actually quite durable building block. They're made of weathering steel. They're made to span 40 feet. That's a 40-foot shipping container, of course. In a place like Winnipeg, there's a net gain of shipping containers, because there's probably not enough things made in Winnipeg and shipped to other places. Kind of tend to collect them here, so they're readily available, reasonably cost-effective as a building material. So, and we're certainly not the first people to try to use shipping containers. There's a washroom building at Assiniboine Park that's pretty nice. It's made out of shipping containers. And there's other architects in the world that have been exploring this idea quite a bit. But as far as I know, I don't know of a bridge made from shipping containers. We've learned about how to do it, and it's as much about controlling the process as it is understanding the technology of it. Building a building is a lot of people involved, and sometimes think of myself as the conductor of the orchestra or the director of the movie sort of thing. I'm not the person holding the camera. I'm not playing the double bass. I can't do everything, right? It's very much a team effort. And so to some degree, I'm kind of like the conductor or the player coach, if you want to use a sports analogy.
When you have young architects that join your firm or you're speaking to those considering the profession, what would you advise them, and what would you tell them you enjoy most about your projects and work as an architect?
Well, it's a good question. I do have quite a few young people here in the office. It's a 10-person firm. We work pretty hard in a lot of ways, sometimes long hours, and especially getting through architecture school, it can be very trying. You have to love it at a certain level, and you know, you have to enjoy the work. And I personally very much enjoy drawing and building models and thinking about design. So it doesn't feel like work to me. And in the office, I try to create that kind of environment. It's a kind of fun that architects have. It's not necessarily, it wouldn't be fun to everybody. Seems like work, probably. Looks like work. But the actual practice of architecture isn't all that kind of fun part of it. By trying to do unique projects, not doing the same project twice, there's maybe more discovery and more invention in a firm like ours. What I would say to young people who are interested in architecture, I find it endlessly fascinating what we do. The relationship to people, to our clients and users. We enjoy getting to know people, discovering what it is they do and what they need. And so the human dimension of it is fun and interesting, but also the technical aspects. You know, we've touched on materiality, and buildings are large, expensive constructions. There's a lot of risk involved. There's a lot at stake when we do things, when we draw things. And so, you know, there's a fair bit of pressure on us to get it right. There's constant invention in the world of building materials. So again, that's also endlessly fascinating. One can never know it all. There's always more to learn. It stays fresh because we are learning. We don't know everything and know that. And it is an important form of culture, I would say. Exactly where does architecture and the world of art intersect? It's probably a good question. I do think that some of the stuff we do has cultural significance. Some of it is probably more like just building. Mm-hmm. See if I make a distinction between building and architecture. But, you know, architecture is an applied art. It's not fine art, I wouldn't say. It has to do something. It has to be valuable to people at some utilitarian level. So we're often kind of juggling. We're trying to decide which hat we should be wearing at any given moment. Whether you should be the artist or the business person or the technician. The good thing about that is it's interesting. And you get to have a lot of different roles. So.
I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us and sharing your insight and architectural perspective. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I wish you continued success.
Well, thank you for your interest. I've appreciated talking to you, and thank you for the opportunity.
Well, thank you. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Art World Innovators on UMFM 101.5. Our guest this evening is Ryan Mayberry, founder of ArtMoi, an initiative to simplify the process of documenting art. ArtMoi is a creation registry platform that provides professional artists, collectors, and galleries with tools to catalog, organize, track, and share provenance-based information on a work of art or collectible object over time. The ArtMoi platform provides a foundation for the adoption of new technology and enables artists and creators to participate in how their work is managed and used. ArtMoi has recently gained institutional support from Western University, the Art Gallery of Ontario, and the Art Canada Institute, where they are collaborating to establish a standard program for building digital catalog raisons for some of Canada's most celebrated artists. ArtMoi has recently adopted a pay-what-you-can pricing model, a unique approach known as the Patreon model for funding creative individuals. Through Ryan's two passions, art and technology, he and the company strive to fulfill ArtMoi's mission, to empower artists and make art more accessible to everyone. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be talking to you.
Can you tell us about your passion for art and technology and how they have led to the founding of ArtMoi?
I think I come by both those passions quite organically. I grew up in an art gallery. My father started his first gallery back in the 1970s, so I've grown up in that environment, surrounded by art, surrounded by artists, and just generally being exposed to it on a day-by-day basis. I've also just always been kind of a nerd, so I taught myself how to program computers when I was a little kid in the 80s, and it's just something I always sort of stuck with as a hobby as a kid, and that eventually turned into work, and I started my first sort of professional jobs was as a computer programmer in a variety of industries outside of the art world, and eventually I was able to just kind of merge the two, art being something that I'm passionate about and software engineering and coding and development just being something that I enjoy doing.
You're also fortunate to have been a speaker at the TEDx in Winnipeg a year ago, and you spoke of ArtMoi's philosophy. Can you elaborate on that for us?
We view ourselves as a very creator-centric organization, something that I kind of learned just being part of the art world and working in galleries and working with auction houses and especially dealing with historical art and secondary market art. So as opposed to contemporary work coming straight from an artist, working with artwork that comes out of an estate or things that people have inherited or were gifted or just, you know, kind of found on in flea markets. And something that I sort of noticed early on is that details, historical accounts, the provenance behind a work of art, even just, you know, dates of when works were created, that type of information was very hard to find. Typically, the person who was in possession of a painting didn't know the whole story behind it, and the ability to kind of research it was kind of lost. And having grown up in that environment and knowing a lot of artists in their lifetime as they were actively producing, I knew that, you know, artists were the best source of information about their own artwork. But the stories and the information and the knowledge that they have was never getting captured, because the process of documenting a work of art typically doesn't happen until late into an artist's career, and often after they've already passed away. So the ability to get authoritative information is difficult, because the primary source of that authoritative information is no longer around. So our philosophy, being artist-centric, means to give artists the tools and the capability to capture those stories and capture that provenance in their lifetime and do it in a way that's kind of organic and just ties in with their own productivity needs and their own just the day-to-day needs that an artist has in managing their own career. So we want to help them be successful artists, but at the same time, allow them to generate an official record of provenance around their work while they do that. And it's something that is kind of absent from the art world. Most technology tools and productivity tools or tech-based tools that are developed for the art world are typically developed for large art galleries, large museums, large auction houses, and not for the individual artist, which, in my opinion, just seems a little counterproductive, because the artist is the start of the supply chain. And that is the point where you need to capture authoritative and authentic information about a work of art.
So are you moving towards advancing a standardized means of artwork identification?
Yeah, we are working with organizations like the Art Canada Institute, the Arts and Humanitarians Department at Western University, to determine what the best practices are for gathering provenance, storing provenance, verifying that information, and making sure that it is accessible and usable from a technology standpoint, not just now, but as technology evolves. So Western University just started this September a course in digital futures of the art world that was put together in collaboration with ourselves and the Art Canada Institute. So they have humanitarians and fine arts students that are studying these best practices and doing a practicum in the process of compiling official catalog resumes on some celebrated Canadian artists. And our hopes is, you know, with that program and that syllabus, it's something that we can share and make available to other schools and other organizations. there needs to be a standardization in what type of information is gathered and how it's gathered and how it's verified. And then we ourselves at Art Moi are trying to establish a technology standard of how artwork information is communicated from one computer system to another computer system, and how the data can be communicated, secured, and verified digitally as well.
Just for a little clarification, can you explain what a catalog raison is?
Yeah, sure. So catalog raison is basically a chronology of an artist's body of work. So it typically lists every single piece of art that an artist has created, or at least the hope is that you get every single piece of art that an artist has created, and catalogs images, details about that work of art, physical details, just size, medium, that type of thing, but also details of where it was exhibited, when it's been exhibited, if it was ever part of important collections, maybe it was illustrated in a book, all the history and events that an individual painting can go through. So that catalog becomes a extremely valuable resource for all different players in the art world. An appraiser will use a catalog raison to help verify and authenticate a work of art. A curator at a museum will use information from a catalog raison to help determine the importance of a work of art or where a single painting fits within a body of work. So it's essentially just a complete history of what a single artist has done or produced. It's essentially, after an artist has completed a lifetime of work, the catalog is their legacy. It is, the chronology of everything that they've left behind.
And you've also begun to use a pay-what-you-can model. Can you tell us a little bit more about this company and your collaboration with their model?
Sure. So artists, individual collectors, galleries, anybody that has a use for Art Moi can access our system under a pay-what-you-can model, which means they can pay us whatever they want to pay us, starting from $0 all the way up to however much they want to give us. We've adopted this model through another online platform called Patreon. Patreon allows any creative individual to sell their work or get support for what they do through just general patronage, something that's kind of been in the art world for hundreds and hundreds of years. Some of the most famous works of art were produced because of patrons, because of people who want to enable an artist to do great things, so they support them financially so that they have the ability and the time to create freely. We view ourselves at Art Moi as artists. We don't paint pictures or sculpt things, but we write code and we develop platforms, and for us there's a similar process for how we build what we build and how an artist builds what they build. So the pay what you can model and the general concept of patronage, I think, works really well for us because it enables artists at any stage of their career to access the full breadth of features and functionality and technology that we can provide. Artists don't have the luxury, typically, of a steady income. Their cash flow ebbs and flows on a daily or weekly basis, and it often ebbs more than it flows. They don't have the means often to invest heavily into technology, and yet they still need to protect their legacy and their copyright and interest in everything they create from day one. They need that protection right when they start their career. They don't just need it when they become successful and can afford a a database to log things in or afford to make a website or afford to produce legal contracts for their work and those types of things. They need it from day one. So the pay what you can model allows them to access all the technology tools that we can provide, and they can pay us when they have the ability to do so. And that model or that philosophy, I think, lends itself very well to the natural instincts of an artist and natural motivation of an artist, and we found that it works extremely well for what we do. We have a lot of artists that can't pay us anything but support us through social media and word of mouth, and will pay us whenever they can. We have some people who pay us and support us with hundreds of dollars a month who don't really need a lot of access to our tools, but they see the value in what we do and want other people to be able to access it as well. So it's certainly a different business model, especially in the software world, but given that we're really kind of focused on a specific niche and a user that has quite unique needs and capabilities, it works really well for us.
Well, we're just running out of time, so I'd like to thank you very much for speaking with us today and sharing your story and the exciting developments of ArtMoi. I wish you continued success.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was Ryan Mayberry, founder of ArtMoi, an initiative to simplify the process of documenting art. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.